You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet,
and story is everything.
We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You've just been listening to Hot Texas, the Hot Texas Swing Band. And these guys are Dripping Springs, and that's kind of important tonight,
yes,
right?
Yes, Dripping Springs, Texas. And we thank Alex Dormont. It's an original piece by Alex, and it is performed by his band. He opens and closes the show every week, and we know we have some listeners tuning in tonight from Dripping Springs, so welcome. Speaking of tonight,
like, who's on? Do we have a guest?
Guests,
yeah. Our guest tonight is Jane Little Botkin, and she wrote this book, The Pink Dress.
Oh.
It's a memoir of a reluctant beauty queen. And we've had a lot of fun. It's a great book.
We have. Hello, Jane. Janie to her friends. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
You're so happy to be. Where now? Tell us where you're joining us from.
I am on a mountain about 8,000 feet up in the middle of the White Mountain Wilderness. It's 25 miles from Lincoln, New Mexico, and 25 miles from Nogal, New Mexico. So Yeah, my husband chose this spot.
Yeah, well, it has to be just beautiful. It's got to be just beautiful.
Well, you're coming through nice and clear tonight.
Yes.
So.
Thank you, Starling.
you have a full weekend planned. We just mentioned Dripping Springs. You have a full weekend planned about this book. Tell us what's going to happen.
I am. I am getting on the road in the morning. It's a 10-hour drive back to Dripping Springs. And the book is launching on Sunday from the VFW Hall, Patriots Hall, in Dripping Springs. And as far as Alex Dormont goes, I want to say this is such a coincidence because I taught his children and I knew him. And this, I couldn't believe this.
That's great.
So what a coincidence. But yes, I'm going to what they call the Drip or Dripping. And then from there, I've got three more book signings and appearances, and then I will be home in 11 days, and I'll take a few days off, and I start again.
Wow.
Guys, looking at your website, you have quite a lineup, I have to admit.
Oh, my goodness.
I do for fall, and spring is filling up. It's getting busy. Yeah.
And you've had an amazing week of these sort of as the book. The book was available originally for pre-order back in April, I think.
It was
April. Actual birth date was just September
10th.
10th.
Tuesday. Yes.
Tuesday.
It was the 10th.
So tell us. You've been like blogging and podcasting and TV interviews and oh my goodness. I think everyone in the world must know about Jane Little Botkin, don't you think?
Most people should.
I wish all of Texas would, and New Mexico, and actually, I wish East Coast and West Coast would hear about this book because I think
it will
resonate. Yeah,
they will. Jim has a little bio we're going to share to just kind of say a little bit more about you.
As an award-winning author, Jane Little Botkin melds personal narratives of American families with compelling stories of Western women. A member of Western Writers of America since 2017, she judges entries for the WWA's prestigious Spirit Award, reviews new releases, and writes articles for various magazines. She is a two-time Spirit Award winner herself. Now, she served as a public school teacher for 30 years before turning to historical investigation and writing. She has won many additional awards, and tonight we're talking about her newest book, The Pink Dress, a memoir of a reluctant beauty queen. And here's a quote from the book. This is from our passionate organizer, Richard Guy. And he says, parents would give us their daughters because they knew they would get a better girl back when it was over.
Was skinnier your girl for sure.
Was that true in your case, Jane?
Definitely.
So tell us a little bit about the backstory. How did this, because this is your first dive into nonfiction, and it's a memoir. So
I do write nonfiction. I'm a historical biographer.
Yes.
Yeah. But this was, of course, a memoir is totally different. And I knew the story, had been taking notes on it for years. It was kind of in the back of my head. And I was at a Western Women conference, Western Women Writers Conference in 2019 in San Antonio. And I think that Mike Gray was sitting over from Wolfpack, was sitting at a different table, sending wine to our table. And we were just all chatting and having fun. There were about four other writers and an agent. And I started imitating an East Texas pageant contestant at the Miss Texas America pageant. And I had them all laughing. And then they said, well, you know, where did that came from? And I explained. And the agent said, Guy Rex, I know about Guy Rex. And she said, you should write this story. And so we all talked about it. And a romance writer sitting at the table said, she said, yes, you're going to write it. And she wrote down a pledge napkin, a cocktail napkin, and said, there it is, sign it. You're going to write this book. Decided that because my mother had just asked that my mother would be another darker side to the story. And so by morning I decided, yeah, I will do that. But I was still working on my Jane Street book. COVID came. And when COVID came, I couldn't go research. I couldn't go into archives. I couldn't go anywhere. So I wrote The Pink Dress.
Jim is famous for sharing quotes, but I have one I would like to
You
share.
Have one?
I do have one. This is Janie writing kind of early-ish in the book. Memories can be beguiling when good. If you have the luxury of time to puzzle the memory pieces back together for the mind's eye, even after all that work is done, the memory may still be faulty with omissions, each rumination colored with emotion. But if the memories are abnormally jagged like shards of glass and you must digest them suddenly, they may force unwelcome pain, repugnant smells, and even gut-wrenching fear to bubble out into your reality. That is what was happening to me. Janie, that is such a vulnerable, authentic, true comment that you write, that it really touched me and grabbed me. How did you come to, you know, actually putting it together? How did you work through the memories?
Well, one of the things I did is, because I'm a historian, I looked at the time period from a historical lens, and I had to put myself into the story as a character. I had to kind of separate myself. And then when I knew I had the memory there, then I had to make sure I was using that younger voice in describing things, which was very difficult for me. And on some of those memories, I blocked them out. But I have friends from fourth and fifth grade who were with me all through this time. They're still my dearest friends. Those are who the THMs are, to the THMs, the dedication. And they remembered things that I went, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. You know, that's just kind of the way it went. But yeah, it was all very fresh, lots and lots of media, lots and lots of scrapbooks, you know, clippings, you know, video, had all of that. But it was those feelings that were going on at that time. And of course, many of them are very vivid, still very, very, a piano scene in particular is very vivid for me to this day. But I had forgotten a few other things that were kind of dark until one of my, you know, a couple of my friends said, oh, don't you remember this? Oh, yes.
Well, Bobby and I were commenting that it's amazing the facts that you remembered. And we thought maybe you might have had to do a little research, a little travel back in time, and maybe visit some of the places that the story takes place. But I thought it was amazing the things you did remember. I'd go back 50 years and I'm thinking, I can remember this item and this item. That's it.
You mentioned at one point in the book, and it's just kind of off the cuff, but you talk about having a photographic memory, and I think it came up with academics. And did you find that that was helpful in writing this or not really?
I'm sure. I do have a photographic memory. I as a student, I could read something one time and I had it, and I would go in and take the test. I mean, that's, I'm just one of those people that has that. Probably of course, I remembered everything that was in the articles. I knew what was in there, but it wasn't until I started putting it in chronological order. What I didn't know was the things that were happening personally with a dysfunctional family. I did not realize how much they had impacted the part with the pageant. I didn't see how all these pieces fit together until I was well into the process. And then I realized what Guy and Rex had done, the Oz they had created, which I can talk about in a moment. And then what was going on at home was so contrary to it. And this dress is just emblematic. It's a symbol of everything that happens, that will happen through the book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how did you decide to become a contestant? How did that transpire?
Well, I'm very, very competitive. And if you ask my friends, they'll tell you I definitely am very competitive. I don't like to, but I did on this particular thing, I thought, okay, I can do this. I didn't really want to, but I told my sorority sisters who were entering as a, well, we wanted to beat the Zetas, and the Zetas were entering, and, you know, it was like an intramural thing. Yeah. And so I signed up. And I thought, oh, well, this is just a fluke. Well, then as the pageant goes, I want to win. But the other thing is the money. The Miss America pageant, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I did, in the end, I did a scholarship paid for my college. So in that regard, that was good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think a lot of girls enter is definitely for the scholarships and opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a very short break. And when we come back, Janie's going to read a passage from the book for us. But first, here's a word about one of the places you can find all of her books, as well as all of the books of our featured guests on Rendezvous with a Writer, the Out West Shop affiliate page on bookshop.org. Don't go away. We're going to be right back in a minute. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer with special guest Jane Vodkin. And we're talking about this great book, The Pink Dress. And I think Jane's going to read something from the book.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm a ham. This is what I used to do with my students. I'd read to them to get them to get involved. So I'm going to set this up. I was not fat, but I wasn't thin either. I think my measurements were like 34, 24, 35, something like that. And the first time Guy and Rex ever had me kind of stripped down, it was like, oh my God, she's fat. And so they put me on a 900 calorie diet for 6 weeks, and I lost 3 inches in each spot. Okay. So I had a 31 inch bust, I had a 21 inch waist, and 32 inch hips. They made my evening gowns with 19 and a half inch waists, and I had a 21 inch waist. And they said, now this is Hollywood. They were really into Hollywood, especially with Wizard of Oz. I mean, they even tried to buy Dorothy's shoes at one point. So the deal was, Janie, you can't eat anything because we're going to push you together and we're going to zip you up in that 19 inch waist. And so I can't even tell you how miserable those 6 weeks were. I mean, it's in the book. But when we got to the Miss Texas, Miss America pageant, what happened was, is they would have you so busy all day long that you'd come in at night and there'd be these, this feast of these tables after rehearsal laid out, all kinds of carbs because they're wanting you to keep your energy up. And all the girls would rush to get their food. You know, it's very all-fattening, carb-rich foods. And Guy, Richard Guy and Rex Holt would stand next to the wall. They weren't allowed to touch me or talk to me, pure Miss America rules. And they would look at me like, don't you dare, don't you dare. And so after the first night, my roommates, I had three suite mates, and they goes, what is the deal? I said, I can't. And they figured that out. So they ran down and got me some candy bars. The next night we came in from rehearsal and we are dragging because they would have us up at 5 o'clock in the morning. We'd be going to bed at 10, 11 o'clock at night. We walked in and there was this gigantic cake on a hat, took half of a banquet table in the shape of Texas. And so that's what this is about. When we walked, and this was at Texas Christian University. When we walked through Shirley Hall's lobby afterward, we were utterly exhausted. Again, local restaurants had provided a smorgasbord of carb-rich food for us. Catching my eye was a huge cake in the shape of Texas, filling half of one banquet table, our geographical areas and representative cities clearly marked on its frosting. The cake, a gift from a contestant, was to be our treat the next day to celebrate the Miss Texas pageant's opening night. Of course, she was trying to win Miss Congeniality. I'll just stick that in there right there. Ironically, the Miss Texas board had a new rule that none of the girls could gain more than 5 pounds over the weight the board set for a girl's particular body type. How would they even know? What was my body type? Anorexic? Back in our rooms, girls washed and set their hair while others pressed dresses for upcoming judges' interviews. Some just stayed up and talked. The next day was my interview, too, as well as my evening gown competition. I should have been reviewing all of my El Paso facts for the judges. But instead, I had gone to find the piano, and I just discovered it didn't work. That was a theme that happened all week long, an inoperable piano. At 2 a.m., lights were out, and our alarm clocks were set for 5 a.m., I lay awake in bed, my stomach in a tight ball. It had seemed that the more our room filled up with flowers, the emptier my belly became. My roommates whispered about the cake downstairs. I don't recall who made the initial suggestion. I'm certain my frustration with about the piano and diet contributed to our shameful plan. The four of us got out of bed and silently tiptoed through the hallway and down the stairs, quiet as pantry mice. Except for muted emergency lights leading toward the front exit, the foyer was dim. The Texas cake beckoned us in the darkness. Someone found forks from the food-laden tables, and we carefully unwrapped the huge cake, trying not to smear the frosted lettering. We didn't bother to cut pieces, but gouged our forks into the geographical areas we each represented. I'm not ashamed to say I devoured all of West Texas, the true West Texas. And still not satisfied, I announced, since the other girls were from primarily North and South Texas, I claimed the panhandle as well. After all, I had been born there in the town without a toothache. I savored the sugary frosting, gorging on cake from Dalhart South to Big Spring, then Mule Shoe East to Childress. And only then was I satiated. Yeah. The next morning, Wednesday, July 7th, the last syllable of a typically monosyllabic word soared upstairs to our ears. We could hear a girl downstairs screaming in her East Texas accent. My cake! And coincidentally, East Texas crumbs were all that remained on them.
I got to tell you, this book is full of stories like that. And it demands to be read aloud. We did a lot of reading aloud to each other, like, wait, you have to hear. Oh, what a fabulous.
So you didn't get caught, right? So
my dress zipped right up.
Right up.
Not a problem.
Nobody went door to door trying to figure out who ate the cake, right?
Oh, my gosh. we didn't talk.
Oh, my gosh.
Would you talk about Rex Guy and the Guy Rex folks a little bit?
They're called the Kings of Beauty. After when I was the first Guy Rex girl, they bought the pageant in 1971. They had been evening gown designers, starting to be, and had been actually dance instructors. And from dance instructing, they built floats for the Sun Bowl. They were really big into costuming, and that was a natural thing to go into these gowns once they bought the Miss El Paso, Miss Texas pageant. Mm-hmm. And they did it like nobody else. The pageant was my pageant. That initial pageant was like a Las Vegas show. We even had Las Vegas entertainers. people, they were paying, I can't remember, it was $60 a plate or something like that to come sit and eat. And they were showmen. And when I went to Miss Texas for Miss America, I went to both USA and Miss America. They sent me with four designer evening gowns. And most of these girls had a $50 gown and swimsuit. And they drove up in two vans, Miss El Paso, Janie Little, and they just kept unloading stuff out into this Shirley Hall. And people were like, oh my gosh, that was the beginning. And they, the pink dress was my talent dress that I wore when I played the piano. That's what that was. Yes. And that is the dress, the actual dress. I had to find a professional photographer to take it. The photo went to New York City, and they had a cover designer in New York City then enhance it so beautifully.
You know, you were their first person, weren't you?
Yes.
Yeah, you kind of made them to some degree, right?
Well, when I went to the Miss Texas for Miss Universe or USA, it was a very poorly run pageant. And floundering, and I talk about that one, and it's not just, but I was supposed to have, there was a certain place I was supposed to have had at the Miss Texas or Miss El Paso pageant, and there's, it's all in there that there was a game going on. And so about 3 years later, after Guy and Rex are now very famous from their gowns, they've been asked after my performance to be on this Miss Texas board of directors, the jig was up. And that's when they bought the Miss Texas USA. And from there, after it was floundering, and from there, they just skyrocketed. They had six Miss USAs. Five of them are called the Texas Aces because they were consecutive, you know, in a row. Yeah. And they became known as the Kings of Beauty.
Yeah, they didn't become famous, but they were very, very good. So
yeah,
they were very good. And the term Guy Rex Girl was trademarked. And so, it's a trademark name.
So tell us a little bit about El Paso, because that is where the first contest was held.
Yeah.
We all are probably, we hear the term and we think Marty Robbins and we, you know, so tell us, just get us up to speed with the El Paso story.
That's where the Western theme enters into this book is because of the city of El Paso. And in Texas, at that point, they thought El Paso was this provincial little town on the Mexican border that really shouldn't have been part of Texas. And actually, Chihuahua, the capital, was closer to El Paso than San Antonio or Fort Worth or Dallas or even Midland. And so the culture there is just this mosaic of far west, western outlaw town, you know, outlawry and a place to go hide and escape. And of course, it also had a military presence on top of that, as it had for years. And so when Guy and Rex show up and we bring all these designer gowns from El Paso, that was why there was such an explosion. After that, they were making gowns for Miss America. Mm-hmm. But the idea that in the West, you can have do-overs. People moved West because of the chance of the opportunity of starting over. Mm-hmm. Going to El Paso was a do-over location. And you could go there if you were in trouble, and many people were. You could go there. You could go on into Mexico if you wanted to and hide, or you could hide in El Paso because it was so far away. And so it has that Western do-over theme. My father got in trouble in the panhandle, and it was because of that Marty Robbins song. And it was either we had to leave, we sneaked out in the middle of the night after stashing some money. Oh, what? Yeah, on a cornice, it's all in there. And we was either Tucson or it was El Paso. We stopped in El Paso and he had his do-over. And of course, and there were some pretty shady characters that I'm associated with and that are associated with my father as well that are in this book. But Guy and Rex had their do-over. And see, that was the Miss Texas. And when they had their do-over, they just went like this to East Texas. We called them the Easterners, you know. And they sent their first Miss USA, Miss Texas. The year they bought the Miss Texas USA pageant, they won it. El Paso won it. She won Texas. They sent her to the Miss USA pageant in New York, in Niagara. And she took a pair of Tony Lama boots with her. And she wore chaps, boots, badge, hat, bolo, you know, and the fuzzy chaps. Furry chaps. And so that was the beginning. And every time they had a Miss USA showed up on a world stage, no matter where in the world it was, that's how she was dressed. And so they brought the West internationally out. I mean, the Westerners, they all call us cowboys anyway in the United States. Well, Guy and Rex just kind of flaunted it in their face, and that's the way the girls went. But they wanted El Paso to know that. And I have a do-over, too. I have a Western do-over, too, without spoiling that. But I have one as well, mm-hmm. So a personal one.
Mm-hmm. You know, that city, I heard recently, and maybe you said this, it's kind of an international city. You know, you can go from, just to go across the bridge from El Paso to Juarez, and, you know, and everybody did it all the time. Anything, a thing about it? I didn't know. You probably didn't even have to have ID to cross.
No, I lived over in Juarez during my college years, practically. We were there every weekend, and it was safe. It was fairly safe. I mean, we knew all the stops and all the places. You just had to have your, I have an opening scene where as long as you get your three pennies, and I was looking for my three pennies because you had to stick it into the meter to get back across. Going into Juarez was easy. Getting back, you had to pay the meter. And, you know, Sounds funny, but I talked about having to dig there to, do I have enough pennies in here? And people up wanting to know if they have change. Mm-hmm. It was very easy to do. You really didn't have any problems. Now, actually starting in around 2000, because I tried to take my son over for something, they were having so much trouble with drug cartels. It's not a safe place to go to anymore.
Mm-hmm. Your book is just filled with really interesting characters. And some are names that we may have heard of, and some were names very well known in El Paso. What we think would be just fun, Janie, going to put you a little bit on the spot. We're going to call out a name and just give us a little snippet, something about that character so that we can call another name out. So we're going to start. Is that good? You're with us on this? This will work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We'll start with Barbara Barrington.
Yes, Barbara Barrington was a Miss El Paso in 1965, and they hadn't had one since. 5'11", skinny as a rail. She had been a Vogue model, and she'd been a professional ballerina. And I had to live with her for 6 weeks. She's the one who prepared my food. And she also, we used ballet exercises to strengthen my calves and my character and this puppet string up here and how I stood and how I could hide a hip or make my waist look smaller. She was wonderful. And so she was my confidant when I was having trouble with Richard Guy and Rex Holt, because the Guy could be a little moody sometimes. I actually made his hair fall out. I'm not bragging about that, but it got bad. So because I was rebellious, I was very immature for this. Most girls, they go like three times before they win, and they're very professional. And I was just thrown into this contest, but she ended up starting the Barbizon School of Modeling in El Paso. So also worked with all these girls.
Mm-hmm. And I think you have a scene with where she's wearing a pink dress.
It was her dress. She designed the pink dress. And she wore it at the Miss El Paso pageant. That's what she put on because they were recognizing her. And she walked into the back room where we all were, and we went, "Oh my gosh, we've never seen a dress like this." And I said, "It looked like it needed little bluebirds flying over it. I mean, it was a Cinderella dress." And everybody just loved the dress, and it was hers. Guy and Rex did not design it. And so much later, after Guy and Rex and I are finally getting along a little bit, they take me to their warehouse to show me all my gowns. And they start pulling these out. And they're hand beaded. They're gorgeous. They're five skirts. And they brought the pink dress. Only it was their pink dress. It was not Barbara's. It was theirs. And they had made it out of drapery nylon. So it didn't wrinkle. And I had like five skirts. Yes. Yeah. And all the silk roses. And it was Barbara's design originally, and Guy and Rex improved on it. And that's the dress that was going to be my Oz, because they were creating, it's even on their tombstone, and it was above the doors on their house. It said Oz for all their guests, their clients, their girls. Yeah. It was a fairyland they wanted for them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Call out a name.
Oh, this detective, I tell you. You know, he was world famous. I heard about this guy a long ago.
He was J.J. Arms. Yes. Yeah. There was just a Facebook or an Instagram thing with an actor just recently talking about how he wanted to write his story, but Nick, actor, I'm going blank, had already bought the rights to write the story, J.J.'s story. J.J. Arms is still alive. He had the detective agency. And he had no hands. He had hooks. He was called the Hook Man. He was on Hawaii Five-O later as the hook man, and they even had a Mattel figure made with him. His daughter was in the Miss El Paso pageant competing against me, and they had a menagerie of animals, and she had a real live leopard up on the stage. But he was also someone who supported me quite a bit, offered me a job later, which I should have taken, because that year he rescued Marlon Brando's son out of Mexico, a little boy, daring helicopter rescue, which made him very famous. And he went on to international fame in acting, plus the detective agency. And his son runs it, Nick, today, J.J. Arms Jr. out of El Paso.
Yeah. Yeah, that's when I first heard about him, was that rescue of
Marlon Brando's son.
Yeah, I forgot all about this. I'm reading the book, and I thought, I remember that.
And he was very intimidating, and people would watch him because he could take off, you know, whatever and screw in whatever he needed to do. But he could eat a steak dinner. He could cut, you know, I mean, just, he was just so skilled at this. But he'd lost his hands when he was a child, so, of course, he got pretty good at it.
Yeah. Okay, here's a couple that somehow get involved, we think, in drugs in some way. Joanne and Lee Chagra.
Okay. They did not. The one of the sponsors was the carpet company, El Paso, it was called, oh, I'm going blank here. But anyway, the Chagras owned it. It was a carpet company. And it was Jimmy Chagra. And he was a drug kingpin in El Paso. Both of his brothers were attorneys. And Lee Chagra and Joanne, who I just love to death, Lee Chagra was his older brother, or he might have been a year younger, I'm not quite sure. But Lee was always defending all of these types of people because he was a very famous defense attorney. And Joanne was an Abraham. And the Abrahams, a theme that runs through this book, are the Lebanese and Syrian families who came across to El Paso right before and after the Mexican Revolution. And they became mainstay families in the area. In fact, I taught Joanne and Lee's daughter, Leslie, and she's read the book. She loves it. And so she's bought copies for all of her book club. But Lee was murdered in 1978. And Jimmy was convicted. He wasn't convicted. He went to prison for the drugs. Finally, the FBI got him. But he was accused and got off somehow of being responsible for the murder of a federal judge, John Wood, in San Antonio, who was involved with his trial. And the person who was the gunman, who did go to prison along with him for the other things, was Woody Harrelson's father. He was the gunman that killed Judge Wood. And so this all kind of goes.
Okay, you ask.
Well, we got to talk about Lee Trevino a little bit.
Oh, Lee Trevino. Tell the Lee Trevino story.
Oh, he had just won the Triple Crown. He'd won all the major golf tournaments. And he had moved to El Paso. And he was like their homeboy, big celebration. And they decided in 1971, in August that year, and I was Miss El Paso, that we were going to have Lee Trevino Day. Trevino Day. And so they had a golf match set up. They had a parade set up. They had a luncheon set up. They had a big show at the Sun Bowl Stadium. And I was a special guest. And so, of course, I got to meet Lee. And his other guests were Bobby Goldsboro and Charlie Pride. And so Bobby Goldsboro and Charlie Pride and I had our own. We had a Cadillac convertibles in this parade. But only the first, we were going to go across the border into Mexico, and only the first four cars went, which was Lee's, mine, the governor of Texas, the mayor of Texas, and one other. That's it. Charlie Pride and Bobby didn't get to go to Juarez. I did, though. And so there were about 30,000 people, they estimated, that stood because he was so popular. Even in Juarez, he was so popular. The children, I mean, it was just unbelievable. And we went to the Palacio Municipal, which was the mayor's offices. It was very old, very old. And we went up these sweeping staircases upstairs, and then they started toasting him. First of all, before we went across the bridge, we all stopped in the middle, and the El Paso police went back, and the Mexican police went forward. And we had a little ceremony there. And we got in there, and we started toasting Lee, you know, Viva Lee. And I'd never had champagne before. I didn't drink. And it was just like, you know, it was that scene I remember down to the last detail. It was so much fun. And he made everybody around him relaxed. He joked. He was just fun. And so that ended up being, and Guy and Rex were nowhere around. They weren't watching me. They weren't telling me what to wear. And so I had a good time.
Now there's an artist that you write about, Tommy Bush.
Yes, Tommy Bush.
Yeah,
Tommy. In April of 72, Sam Peckinpah showed up in El Paso to film The Getaway. And that was a big deal because they used a lot of our old high school haunts and other places to film this movie. And Slim Pickens was there and Sally Struthers and Ally McGraw and Steve McQueen, those people. And so when they hit El Paso, they were, I mean, it was big news. It was really big news. Well, my photo had been on the front page of the paper also. I was getting ready to go to the Miss Texas for Universe pageant. And my photo was there constantly. And it would be right there coupled with the Getaway people. And so I didn't know it, but Peckinpah had just gotten married, a quickie marriage over in Juarez. And this woman had discovered this prisoner artist in El Paso at Latuna Federal Prison. And actually, Tom Bush was out on parole and he had become an artist. He had been in prison for white slavery and the woman escaped by swimming across the Brazos River. I mean, you can't make this up. And so he had become an artist in prison and he liked people's eyes. And she had gotten him to do Steve McQueen and do some other things for Peckinpah. Well, he saw my pictures. And so he started painting me and drawing me. And I was presented with two of his portraits when I went out as Miss El Paso. He later was, he got acting parts. He got in The Getaway. He got in lots of Peckinpah movies. He did other major films as a B actor. And then he was on Maverick. He was, he was Deputy Sturgis on Maverick. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay, do you have time to ask for one more?
Well, it was interesting. I was reading about Peckinpah from one of our other authors a while back, and I can't remember quite what the story was, but.
Oh, I can tell you something. I can tell you something very quickly. Stuart Rosebrook's father wrote Junior Bonner, and they were there watching the premiere of Junior Bonner in El Paso while my pageant was going on, and that's why Tommy Bush couldn't come present the portraits in person. There was an article, you're right, Jim. I think it was in, might have been in Roundup or someplace.
Or True West. Yes. Or True West.
Or True West. It was True West.
Roundup or True West. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we've been talking about the characters, but I want to back up just a little bit. You know, people think of, you know, beauty contests. Sometimes today, they don't always get a perfect image in their mind what a beauty contest might be about. But back then, it was big business for the whole town. Everybody loved it. You got sponsors. Everybody made money.
Yeah.
Yes, El Paso passed a resolution when I was a candidate for Miss El Paso. It was El Paso, you're looking good. And that was the big deal. And what Guy Rex did is they put them on the map in Texas. And then, of course, once they bought the USA, Miss Texas USA, it broadened. But right after that was Lee Trevino. So then it was El Paso, you're looking good. That continued. And then when we became a movie setting for The Getaway, because we'd done very few movies there. They'd come down into the interior of Mexico. That's where John Wayne would go, but not in El Paso proper. And so once that was done, El Paso is just, everybody's into this. They even tried to make a little Tucson area for Westerns, with streets like to do that. But people did. My wardrobe was entirely donated. I think I ended up with about $7,000 worth of clothes and things. And the girl after me, you know, it was a car, it was an apartment, it was... I mean, they just came in and did all this. And then on top of that, you've got all the Guy Rex gowns. And I think I had five by the time it was over. Yeah.
Janie, we're going to step away again for just a minute. We are delighted to welcome Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, sponsors of Rendezvous with a Writer. And if you are a writer, right, Janie, find out what they can do for you. Here is a word from Blue Cottage Agency, and we'll be right back. Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. Experienced, trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer, special guest Jane Botkin, and we're talking about the pink dress. And this is a great story, and she's got a lot of stories.
She's got so many stories. I'm looking at time. Oh my gosh. Okay, so Janie, another story, and we'd love to get to two quick, so you'd only have like 2 minutes to do each one of them. But you were a judge during the a Miss El Paso contest pageant when there was a blackout.
There was a car hit a power pole and it knocked out all of the lights in East El Paso, the airport, everywhere. People were trapped at the airport and we were in the middle of a pageant. And I was a judge along with an actor who played Rick Weber on General Hospital and the art director for The Getaway and a few others. And we were sitting in a little hotel room. There was a break and we were trying to tabulate and we had to do it by candlelight and flashlights. You know, and people had shown up and Jay Arms was wearing a glittery tuxedo. And they said the candlelight would bounce off of him because you'd know where he was. But anyway, that night, an African-American, a black girl won and she was perfect. She was they talked about the irony of that. But she was just absolutely perfect. She had the right waist measurements. She had the right hair, the right skin. She was already very accomplished. And this was a high watermark for a guy in Rex because they had had Hispanic girls, but they'd never had a black woman win. And she could have entered into the Black Miss America El Paso pageant because they had their own pageant. And she chose not to. And she became a Guy Rex girl. And not only was she successful, but then she had her degree in marketing. She ended up working with them for years and helping them put on this Miss USA, get their Miss USA's ready and their Miss Texas pageants and everything. And she's a friend of mine today. And I judged her. So Fran Ford. She was awesome.
Okay. And then one more story, because we need to know about the pink dress on talent night.
On talent night, I put on that dress and it was like, I saw this princess. I mean, I looked in the mirror and thought, oh my gosh, this is Barbara's dress. And Barbara Barrington. And Barbara Barrington was with me and she had hand glued all these little rose petals on shoes. And she said, whatever you do, make sure you put these shoes on. And I had just been wearing a turquoise gown. And I forgot. Mm. I wore my turquoise shoes. I had not played the piece at all. It was a medley from the movie Love Story. It had a classical piece in it. And you could not hit one wrong note because if we were in this brand new auditorium, it would pick up one errant note. And the piano had been broken all week. I was a passable piano player. And I sat down and I started playing and I played it perfectly. I watched my hands at one point. It's like God was playing. I mean, it was like I watched my fingers in the mirror and I was like, I'm not doing this. It was an outer body experience. And everybody clapped. It was perfect. I got up and I walked out in my turquoise shoes. but anyway, that was a major point at that point in the pageant.
And it's so beautifully written. That whole episode, you just feel like we're with you, we're in you, we're on the keyboard, we're listening, we're in the audience, we're everywhere. That experience, the way you describe that experience.
Yeah, I'd been praying. I'd been doing a lot of praying and it paid off. Yeah.
All right. So now I'm looking at time. Oh my goodness. So let's talk about very quickly. You have a story in this brand new anthology, Through Western Storms. Tell us a little bit about this.
Richard Prosh curated it, and he asked me to write a story. I've never written fiction in my life. And he said, you can do it. You can do it. So I tried, and I did. It's called A Death on the Concho. I'd been researching for my biography on Marianne Goodnight, and I had come across this context of the Battle of Dove Creek. And so that's the background of this story, and I was able to put these characters together to do it. And I'm very excited because my friends' stories are in there. Natalie Bright, Denise McAllister, Jim Jones. Yeah. I'm sure I'm leaving out people. Preston Lewis. There's great writers in there, and I'm thrilled to be part of that anthology.
Yeah, many of them have been guests or are coming on, so we're excited as well. What else are you working on?
Yeah, something else. That's right.
Yeah, what else are you working on, and where can people find you?
Okay, I am writing right now, finally writing. I'm finished the research. I am writing The Breath of a Buffalo, a biography of Mary Ann Goodnight. I'm writing her book. Right. And it should be out in 2026. And I'm a fourth of the way finished. And my books can be found in any bookstore, obviously bookshop.org, where you can go there for indie bookstores. And of course, obviously Amazon and Barnes and Noble, but I think you can look anywhere and you can order the book.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great.
Okay. Yeah. So don't go away. Jim has a quote.
We have another quote or two.
So much fun, Jamie. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. What a great time.
Jim has a quote.
Yeah. We got another one from the Guy Rex guys, particularly Guy Holt. And I think he did all the talking with those two. It's all about the show, the glamour and beauty. Glamour and beauty will always sell.
And you have another one. Go ahead.
And this is from Miss Texas of 1989, the last of the five in a row. And this is Gretchen Willamus. Clarity is truth. We all desire truth. It eases our mind. Gives us confidence. It keeps us and others straight. Ask for clarity to be evident in your day. Seek for clarity from above. It's a form of faith, a belief in things not seen.
She's great. Gretchen is a perfect example of success after her role as beauty pageant queen in Miss USA and second runner-up to Miss Universe and Miss Texas.
Well, we look forward to having you back, Janie. So
thank you.
Please, we want to keep in touch with everything you have going on. And you were the memoir part of our month of September mayhem, which was last week. Memoir, which was tonight. Murder, which is next week. And medallion winner, which will end our month, Mapping the Night. There is a serial killer on the loose. And our guest next week is author J. David Bethel. And we are looking forward to, again, changing up what we read and moving from one genre into the next. And I know you are very anxious to read this book. When it came to our attention, Jim was like, serial killer? Yeah, book them.
Well, it's good. It's, you know, it's kind of a little change.
It's different than a memoir, Jim.
Well, you know, we had Courtney Joyner on
last week.
Yeah, and he's totally into horror.
Yeah, yeah.
And he made that movie, that slasher movie, Quadrant.
Yeah, so. It was great. And, of course, Henry Park with True West Magazine film editor was with us. And it's just so fun. We have loved getting to know so many of you that are, well, we're part of the group too, but the Western Writers of America has just been a wonderful, wonderful time. So, gosh, Jim, we're good. What's our closing thought? Do we have a closing thought?
It's always a great day out west.
And we will see you next week. Catch the podcast on any of your favorite channels. And Janie, once again, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, guys. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Janie.
Have a great weekend.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.